Leading off with the big story of the day, here's The Drive with Zach Bye and Denver, Colorado's own Philip Lindsay.
Quit it now!
1 hour in the books, lickety split. Happy Thursday. You can reach out and touch the weekend from here. And tomorrow, you're not going to have to reach out. It's going to be right there on your doorstep. And Phil and I are going to be out on the road. It's The Drive's Brouhaha. Our first step is Edgewater at Edgewater Beer Garden tomorrow. We'll be there from 2 to 6. If you want to know more details, you can head to denversports.com/drive. But that's the nuts and bolts of what you need to know. We're doing the show live from Edgewater Beer Garden tomorrow, 2 to 6 p.m. Hopefully you guys are having a good Thursday. Thanks for making us a small part of it. We had our annual pre-draft press conference this morning. Only a couple times a year do we hear from Sean Payton, George Payton in this kind of setting. And look, they're not going to come out and tell you who they're going to take in the draft.
No. No.
Although like, there was like an attempt. There was an attempt, and George is like, dude, really? Like, no, I'm not going to tell you our board right now.
If you don't try, you don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah, you ask the question, right?
You have to.
That's what they teach you. but it was curious. They looked like they were in a good place from just a human standpoint. Like, they've done press conferences, and they do them on their own. This one was a joint one. They were, like, working together, and that was actually one of my bigger takeaways. It's like, these guys look like they get along great and like they're working together and it's a good working relationship to the point where like George Payton was at the start of the press conference, like jumped in and interrupted Sean and was like, huh, typically like you do that with people you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
Like we're doing this radio show. We're talking every day, 4 hours. We interrupt each other all the time.
Yeah.
It was interesting to see that dynamic on display.
No, it really is, man. When in the grand scheme of things, when you're really looking at this deeply, and I think we look at things too deeply at times, but it seems like they do have a good relationship out there to the public. Now, we don't know behind closed doors how they truly feel about each other, but they know that they have to work together. They have to get this first-round pick right. They just do, right? Whether it's a quarterback, a lineman, which I don't think it's going to be, a tight end, whatever the case may be, it needs to be a hit. They need to hit the jackpot on it. So they all have to be on the same mindset, the same wavelength, the same thinking, the same process of doing things. So it's good to see them both together.
Here is George Payton, Broncos general manager, talking about the 12th overall pick.
One thing we know, we're going to get a really good player at 12. We've had teams call to move up. We've had teams call to move back. We have flexibility, but we do know at 12, if we stand pat, we're going to get a really good player.
Do you believe in that teams have called for both trading up and swapping with them, or teams who have been calling them to trade back?
Yeah, I don't see any team wanting to swap and trade down to get to that 12th pick while they're already ahead of the Denver Broncos. Why would you do that in no man's land? Now, I can see where teams are calling and say, hey, can we move up to get to that number 12 spot? Because it's going to help us out. But it's like, what, the Patriots are calling you to say, hey, we're willing to give you number 3 and we'll take 12? Like, no, not hardly. I don't believe that part.
That would be a call Denver would make.
Yeah.
Of like,
you would think,
we get up to 3? Not the Patriots calling them, hey, do you want to come up to 3?
Like, you want number 3, y'all? Like, no, I don't see that happening.
Yeah. And I guess if there was a scenario where a team would call Denver wanting to move back from where they are, it would be a team that already has a quarterback.
Yeah.
And then it's like, hey, let these other teams pick quarterbacks and we'll go to 12 and let a great player fall to us. But
who would that be? What team would that be?
Well, the first 3 picks need quarterbacks.
For sure.
The Arizona Cardinals have a quarterback. The 5th overall pick is the Chargers. They're not doing business with Denver. The 6th overall pick, they have Daniel Jones. I mean, but they could very much be in the quarterback market. That could turn the draft on its head if the Giants picked a quarterback. That lives within reason. The Titans have a rookie quarterback or going to be a second-year quarterback in Will Levis. Maybe the Falcons? But, like, they're picking at 8 and, like, moving from 12 to 8, I just don't think it does much for one of the quarterbacks at the top of the draft. So, yeah. Maybe some exploratory call, but Nothing serious. I wouldn't imagine.
No, I don't think they called it at all. I don't think anybody say, hey, we want to trade our number five pick and we're gonna swap with you. We'll be 12. I don't think that's happening. Other than maybe the Arizona Cardinals, but everybody's trying to get that spot.
Right.
You got the Minnesota Vikings trying to get that spot. Maybe you have the New York Giants trying to move up to that spot. Who knows?
Maybe.
So everybody's jockeying to get that spot.
Maybe the Raiders.
Maybe the Raiders. But I know that Chargers aren't going to do business with Denver. We're in their division.
Right. And that's a call, again, that teams have to make to them. I don't think their general manager, Monty, would be calling down the draft trying to move back. Their phone is the one that's ringing. They're not picking it up and making the calls. So I agree with that. Here's a little bit more from George Payton talking about the quarterback position in the first round.
Yeah. What you don't want to do, Mike, is force it. And, otherwise we'll be in this position next year and the years after. So you want to get the right player at 12. Our first pick we got to hit on. Whether it's a quarterback, whether it's a tackle, receiver, you name it, we need to get an impact player.
I do like the fact that they're owning it. Like, need. We have to hit on this pick.
Yeah.
And it's just leaning into the truth, that's all. They have to get it right. And it doesn't, even if they don't go quarterback, they have to get, like George said, an impact player at 12. Well,
if they don't get a quarterback, are they getting it right? That's a question from me to you. Is would this consider a success, be successful, if we don't get a quarterback, we go ahead and get an edge rusher? Did they do it right? Did they hit on it? You know, did they get that right when we know that we need a quarterback?
God, it's not going to feel like it in the moment, I'm afraid. Who would be the quarterback then? Like, if
they could try to make a trade for Daniel Jones. Because if it's...
What did you just say?
They could do something. Like, think about it. If the Giants move up and get a quarterback. I know, nobody likes it, right? But who else is out there? Jared Stidham? Like, when we have nobody else, and if we don't hit on this quarterback in the first round, I guess if
Daniel Jones was on a rookie contract, I could entertain it.
That's true.
I can't believe they paid that man.
I know.
$92 million.
I forgot about it, man. Truly. They paid that man. He got hurt, and they already tried to get rid of him.
It was a four-year deal for $160 million. The $92 million is guaranteed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the Broncos aren't in that position for a rehab project.
I forgot about it. I truly, man. Who gives the quarterback all that money? What kind of crazy team would give all the quarterback all that money and then get rid of him the next year?
I see what you did. I see what you did there. here's a little bit more from Sean talking about if they have to take a quarterback in the first round.
Do we have to draft a quarterback? You'd say, man, it sure looks like we have to draft a quarterback, and yet it's got to be the right fit, the right one. And if we had the tip sheets as to who everyone else was taking, it'd be easier to answer that question. And so that's the puzzle here.
The dramatic pauses are undefeated. Dude, between the dramatic pauses... And I watched this whole press conference earlier today. The dramatic pauses, the relative, and the our league. The amount of times he says our league.
Oh, man.
And they take like ownership of the shield, of like the NFL shield. I love it.
The pauses, honestly, it's a good thing because I think it's just like going through his brain. Like
he's not in a rush. He's not in a rush for you. Like,
let me make sure I don't say no dumb stuff.
Yeah.
That's going to kind of tip our hand. Let me pause, do a couple...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Relatively.
Like smacking his lips.
Nothing more to share.
But you hear him like, yeah, you look at the situation, you would say, yeah, we have to draft a quarterback. The closer we get, I'm more convinced. They're drafting a quarterback in the first round.
Oh, yeah.
I just feel like it's like 89% certainty. Do you get that?
Yeah. I think that we need a quarterback. I think we're going to draft a quarterback. I think that Sean Payton going on the record and saying what he just said right there is saying that if they had the tip sheet, obviously they would know who other teams are picking, which then would help them pick the quarterback that they want. So they're already nervous about other teams getting the quarterback that they want. So maybe it is your precious J.J. McCarthy, Zach. That's what it's looking like. It's looking like they kind of like J.J. It's looking like they want to move up to get him. But are they going to be able to get him? They don't have the tip sheet for that.
No, they don't. And that's why the idea that the trade up the draft was going to happen this past month probably was never going to happen. Mm. If it's J.J. McCarthy, you have to make sure he's there.
Yeah.
And if you trade it up before that moment when you're sure he's there, you have to be okay with drafting multiple quarterbacks because you don't have their tip sheet. You don't know what the Patriots are going to do. It may be Drake May is the one that's actually there at four. And maybe we've been talking about four trading up with Arizona. Maybe it's trading up with the Patriots. Like, I'm listening to a podcast earlier today that's a super smart guy, and he's at heart a Patriots fan, and he's like, my fear is we're trading out of that pick, that we're trading back.
Yeah.
And is that what I think is going to happen? Probably not, but, like, it could. It could trade all the way up to three. It's going to cost even more.
Arizona and the Patriots have so much leverage in the upper hand. If I was a GM, I'd be calling them every day and just, like, playing with everybody. Hey, if y'all want this pick, you're going to have to be the first to call me. And you better have everything together. You better have three first rounds and all this, because if you're not ready, I'm hanging the phone up on you and I'm going for the next person, because you know everybody is waiting to see where JJ falls, where Drake May falls, and then they're going to be calling right away. It's going to be hectic, man. This is going to be interesting.
Here's a little bit more from Sean Payton earlier today talking about the uncertainty ahead of 1 week from today.
Every year at this time, obviously, there's a lot of attention on the draft. It's exciting. I think it's obviously exciting for us, the scouts, everyone involved. But also, I think it's exciting for the fans, meaning, you know, that some may have gotten a glimpse of these guys at the combine. But there's and where I'm going is it's generally the first round. And if you really narrow it down, the focus for the fans are like those first 15 picks, you know, and the part of the puzzle, if we were looking at our draft board and you looked at the screen and you said team needs, you know, there's a handful of teams ahead of us where you'd say quarterback, and you know, there's a team or two, Minnesota, ourselves, the Raiders, you could argue quarterback. And that's what makes it this year a little interesting.
It's very interesting. And he talked about team needs. Where does team need come in versus, and this is an age old question, where does team need come in versus best player available when you're in a position like the Denver Broncos? Because there's so many team needs. Now, the biggest is quarterback. We know that. But if you're Denver, it's like, do you take, if they're not going to move up, let's just say they're not going to move up, do you take what, in your evaluation, is the, let's say the fourth or fifth best quarterback versus the best edge rusher in the class versus the best tight end in the class? And I we've gone back and forth about this. I still don't know the answer to that question. I'm talking about for me personally. Like, if they don't move up, if they move up, that's different, because you're going to strike and you're going to get a top four guy. But when it comes to getting like the fifth or sixth thought of quarterback in a class versus like a top edge rusher or tight end, again, I still don't know. If they don't move up, how Denver will operate.
Yeah, I think the question to that is, in Denver's case, we have so many holes to fill, so many spots that we need, that it's a little bit easier or maybe a little bit harder before a team that says, we have everything already here, we just need a quarterback. It's a little easier to say, okay, we can just go and grab somebody else because we're not needing really nobody else. It's just that's the best available. We're not going to just rush and pick a quarterback just to pick a quarterback. For Denver, though, they have so many spots that they need that if they don't go for a quarterback, the next best option to me would be a tight end, and it still would be a good pick.
Over edge rusher?
Over an edge rusher. I just think that we have edge rushers that are still young, and
solid.
We're not paying them.
Yeah,
and we don't know what they're going to be. And you're going to have a situation probably where you give up on one of them early and it ends up being a Shaq Barrett situation where they go to another team and then they're sitting there having 22, 20, 19 sacks that year and we're sitting here mad again because we developed these young men, didn't see them all the way through. George drafted them. And if it's up to George, he's not going to let them go right now because they are talented if they can stay healthy. If it could click for them this year, so you want to go get a tight end.
So you want to continue to see because those guys are like, how would you describe that group?
Team need. I'd rather get a team need than just best available.
Okay, so you'd rather have, if I told you there's the best tight end in the class,
yep,
versus the second best edge rusher in the class,
yeah.
You would allow the presence of Benito, Browning, and Cooper. Say, you want to know what? That's enough of a checked box. We're going with the tight end.
Yeah, I mean, look, last year they won. Because we won the games we did, it was because of the defense.
Yeah, agreed.
And Nick Benito, Cooper, Baron Browning, they were on that defense. So if I'm looking at it, I'm like, I'm not going to just give these kids up right now. We did some good stuff last year. They're the reason why we were on a 5-game win streak. But we do need a tight end because I don't know what Dulcich is going to do. He's probably a hurt still right now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's
something we don't know.
Yeah, here's Sean talking about how they rank their draft board and which players carry more value.
I think historically speaking, our league has always valued certain positions, you know, quarterback, tackles, corners, pressure players. And so that factors into the grade. Belichick was on this podcast the other day, which was kind of interesting because you get a chance to hear him in a different light. And I've gotten to know him over the years. And he said something that was interesting. He's like, look, every one of these teams' boards are different, like dramatically. And then obviously when you move away from one, the margin of difference expands. You know, in other words, as you get closer to one, they're still different. And so... but do we factor in the position they play relative to, yeah. I mean, we're in these group studies in the fifth round and in the middle of the fifth round, let's say six players and one of them's an edge player and the other's, tight end or guard. I don't know that there's any such thing as they're equal, but the edge player has more value.
Okay, so that's the clip I wanted to get to,
yeah,
on the heels of what we were just talking about. Because I think that Sean may have, and dude, you got to be a detective. You got to have like your ear to the ground of these answers and use maybe like a magnifying glass over the words. and I'm totally speculating. But there's a possibility that Sean just let it slip there. His hierarchy in his mind, he's like, say if in the fifth round, these guys are graded similarly, and it's an edge, I don't know, a tight end and a guard. He goes, you take the edge. Does that same logic apply to the first round? If you have similar grades on a guy? And I'm asking because if you're not going to move up and mortgage your future, and you're like, we're just going to take a great football player, would he select a guy like, I'm just making it up, the Latu kid from UCLA, yeah, or Jared Verse from Florida State? Would he say, you want to know what? I know we don't have a tight end. We don't have a tight end. We have a couple edge rushers. But we have these guys graded similarly, and we're going with the higher positional value in an edge rusher. Am I making sense? Because I'm rambling a little bit.
No, you really are. And this is the beauty of the draft in different teams, in different teams' philosophies. You know, somebody may think how Sean thinks, and somebody else may think like, that's not the way we do things.
Sure.
I guarantee the Rams think differently of how maybe Sean thinks differently. And that's why where they will make their decision on who they're going to pick. I think that Sean did tip his hand in saying that edge rusher is more important than those positions. And if it does come down to like, okay, we're just going to pick the best available person, who is it going to be? And edge rusher is the best available person out of a mediocre tight end or something like that. And although you need a tight end, I'm going to pick the best available person at this 12th spot.
Yeah,
because we talk about reaching so much anyway, even with the quarterback position. You don't want to reach with any player. So you just take the best available person, I guess. I don't think it's going to make us happy, but at least they're true to what they're going to do.
Right. Because the thing is, if you think that guy, if you think Jared Verse is going to be Von Miller, if you think the Latu kid is going to be, you know, Nick Bosa, are you going to let Benito Browning and Cooper prevent you from drafting that because you're like, we don't have a tight end? I just think it's fascinating. I think it's fascinating.
What would you do? And think about it. Think you're George.
Yeah.
And you drafted these young men. And that's what happens is you're the one that drafted them. You want to see it through because it only makes you look great if they end up panning out.
Sure.
You know, but if you move on from them, it's like, okay, you didn't believe in them. That's another dud of a draft pick.
But George also drafted Greg Dulcich.
He did.
So it's like, would you prevent, let's just say Browning and Cooper and Benito. You have them all as like a 7 out of 10. And I'm doing like super rudimentary here, yeah. Like elementary stuff. Say they're a 6.5 out of 10. But your tight end is a 3 out of 10.
Mm.
And you think Jared Verse is going to be Nick Bosa. Do you let the guys in the room prevent you who are solid? And the other position is like vacant. You don't have a tight end.
No, you don't have one.
How do you operate? I don't know. I think that
I guess you would go with best available. Because why are you going to reach for a tight end that's not really going to fill that void that you need to fill just because you need that guy at that position, right? You may be able to get him later on. And then now you have someone like Von Miller that you think, or Joey Bosa, and then you still get that tight end later on. You get your cake and eat it too.
Yeah, maybe. And the history says tight ends drafted more late.
Yeah.
You know, not first round. Actually, the first round history of tight ends, it frowns on the position.
Yeah. But if Brock Bowers is sitting right there.
Yeah.
And the edge rusher's sitting right there.
Yeah.
You don't get a quarterback. But the edge rusher's a little bit more graded higher than Brock Bowers.
Yeah.
Let's just say, which would be crazy, but
so
the edge rusher.
So Jared Verse is like a 97 and Brock Bowers like a 91.
Yeah. Who are you taking?
Brock Bowers. You?
I'm taking Brock Bowers because we need that position. And he's supposed to be one of these generational talents. I can't give that up. I cannot count on Dulcich another year.
Yeah.
I got to take Brock Bowers.
And in the pass rusher's cupboard, it might not be steak. It might be like canned goods, but there's something there.
But they have done some good things at times,
yes,
we were able to win with them on a 5-game winning streak because they decided to wake up. I'm going to trust that for another year.
All right. Interesting conversation. We'll circle back to a little bit later in the show. In the meantime, Caitlin Clark's hysteria is now moving beyond college basketball, and next month could literally impact another sport. Details next. All right, let's come off the top rope with it.
One.
All right, Caitlin Clark hysteria. Man, I'm going to be honest with you. And you may have heard it in my voice when talking about the WNBA.
Uh-huh.
That I wasn't sure if it was going to translate. And I've talked like Kamaje Granderson here, who helps us with the show incredibly. He's the only person that I know that watches WNBA basketball.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I just have my doubts whether this college story is going to become a thing. But we keep getting these details. It's like, whoa, about the cost of the tickets when
they're throwing little things at us.
Yeah. How about this, man? This is pretty interesting. ESPN, the executives, have a decision to make next month. Air game 5 of a second round NHL playoff series on ESPN, or air the rights or air Caitlin Clark's debut with the Indiana Fever.
Mm.
So you have a sport that's more popular on paper than women's basketball in the second round of a playoff. Do you put that on ESPN or do you put Caitlin Clark's debut on ESPN? They own the rights to both games. They got a decision to make.
That's a big boy decision, too.
It is.
You're talking about a playoff game.
Yes, versus her first game. But is her first game going to mollywop the rating of an NHL playoff game?
And my guessing is it will. It's fresh. It's exciting. Okay? It's something new. We want to see what Caitlin Clark's going to do. See, I just rhymed there?
Yeah, you did. You kind of were spitting there. Keep going.
Let's go. But I think they're going to end up going with the Caitlin Clark situation.
I think so, too.
It's just, it's a smarter way to make more money. I think there's going to be a lot of people viewing that game. When you're dealing with the hockeys in the playoffs, it's a series. It's a series. So I think that's what you have to take into consideration.
That this one is a one-time event.
Yes.
Yeah, I ultimately think that's what the executives at ESPN are going to do. I went back and looked it up to make sure that it was so close. Nearly as many people watched the WNBA draft last week.
Yeah.
Or earlier this week, I guess. Is that last week or this week?
No, it was this week.
It was actually. This week. Earlier this week. Yeah. So more people watched, or no, about as many people watched the WNBA draft as they watched the Stanley Cup last year. The Stanley Cup.
And this is what's crazy about it is, what time did the draft start? Was it a Monday? It was on a Monday.
Yeah, I think it was on a Monday,
At 5:30.
At 5:30, while people were just getting home or on the road, we were still on air, in the office for us.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people watching that.
7:30.
Watching that draft.
7:30 Eastern. So I just want to throw it out there. 7:30 p.m. Eastern.
You're right. Where,
yeah, because the draft was in Brooklyn.
The draft was in Brooklyn. 47% of the country lives on the East Coast. I got it. But, dude, if you're an executive, I think it's a flat-out mistake if they air that second-round NHL game. So we'll see what they do. Do you see about the tickets? The Indiana Fever are seeing the courtside seats for her debut going for $2,500. To put it in perspective, you can sit at a courtside at an Indiana Pacers game this coming week for $1,200. Double to sit at her opening game.
She better get some of that money.
Well, she's getting her money because it came out yesterday. Nike is pursuing her for an 8-figure endorsement deal. That is $10 million or more with Nike. I guess Under Armour pitched her.
Uh-huh.
Steph Curry, I guess, was a part of the pitch. It's like, nope, go with Nike. So she's getting her money. But this is going to be fascinating here. Can she elevate an entire professional sports league? Fixing to find out.
One, two.
Man, Phil, I legitimately feel bad for Michael Porter Jr. I do.
Yeah.
Just as a human being. Earlier in the week, Jonte Porter received the first ever lifetime ban as an active player in the NBA.
Yep.
Tomorrow, Corbin Porter has his prison sentence for vehicular manslaughter last year. Now, in February, he pled guilty to it, okay? And a part of the plea deal agreement is that he will be sentenced to no more than 8 years in prison. Without it, he could have faced up to 24 years. So that means Michael Porter Jr. is finding out about the fate of his brother, who, from my understanding, has been living with him, and his prison sentence 24 hours before the playoffs start.
That's hard, man. That's hard. Like, to think about it, I'm thinking about my two brothers. I got two brothers and two sisters. But if both my brothers were going through issues, one's going to prison, the other one's banned because he made a wrong decision, like, that's going to weigh heavy on my heart. I'm going to be thinking about it a little bit. And we know that we need MPJ to be focused at, you know, and at his best.
Yeah.
Because he's not always there. And I've said that in the past, that sometimes he doesn't look like he's all in and all there because of distractions of the family issues.
Sure, sure. I mean, just as a human being, you have to understand, like, if he's carrying a weight. But selfishly, I obviously want him to be in a good place, but the Nuggets have a big boy series starting.
They do.
And you know who has played great against the Lakers? It's Michael Porter Jr. You remember that day where he went perfect from the field? He went 10 of 10 from the field, 5 of 5 from 3, 25 points. First time that's ever happened in NBA history when someone's taken 10 shots or more and finished with 25 or more perfect from the field. Against the Lakers, game before that, he went for 27. They need him. He is a bit of an X factor in this series. I guess we'll be playing Body Language Doctor on Saturday.
Yeah, Body Language Doctor. And honestly, we're going to find out. When the buzzer goes off and Michael Porter Jr. didn't do well, you know, we're sitting here saying we're going to need him. And if we don't win that game because Michael Porter doesn't do well, it's going to be an issue.
Yeah. God, man. Corbin Porter sentencing tomorrow. We'll know what it is by the time we get on the field. I don't even know what further to say about that issue.
One, two.
All right, we're gonna circle back to Deion and CU, and he went on the record and cleared some things up, and I'm glad that he did.
Yeah.
I want to get into that here in just a couple minutes. But Alton McClaskill transferring out of CU. This kid was supposed to be like a true blue chip transfer portal coming from Houston.
Yeah, I was surprised, man.
Yeah, and he was hurt.
Mm-hmm. Last year.
Yeah,
last year after he was coming off a knee injury.
Yeah, he was. Didn't play a lot, but this was supposed to be like a huge year for him. He's transferring. He would have been like the 1-1A,
yeah.
You know, running back.
I thought so. I mean, I thought he was the starting running back or the 1-1A.
Yeah.
You in today's football, a lot of running backs are going to play. It's a rotation, right? That committee. You run by committee.
Yeah,
that's
totally,
how it goes.
Totally.
But for him transferring, and I think his father did something.
He did, man.
Do you have it?
I do. And this, I actually thought of you.
Okay.
I thought of you when I read it.
Well, hopefully not bad, man.
No. It was actually something that you said a day or two ago about, we'll get to that in just a second, because his dad jumped on Twitter and said, quote, "If my son's not RB1, we gotta go. He was ready last year!" Exclamation point, which is interesting. He's 100% this year. Unfortunately, I have to find another home where there's no favoritism, and he is valued, appreciated, and has no doubts about RB1. He's the best running back in Colorado, but he's not settling. We going. End quote. I thought of you because you were like, a lot of times, because I was saying a different side of it, like, each kid's transfer is its own story.
Yeah.
But you were saying, like, if there's this many, kids are just bailing with adversity.
Yeah.
They're bailing because he's not anointed the RB1
exactly.
In April?
Like, the thing is, you just want to be the RB1 and have no competition, nobody to push you to be better. Like, this is what I'm talking about. My father and my mother would never, ever go on Twitter. They don't even have one, but if they had one, and talk about me. That's my story. There'd be times where I was benched. Okay, Coach Mack benched me a couple times.
Okay.
My father and them didn't say anything. They said, find a way. What are you going to do about it? That was between me and me. Looking myself in the mirror and decide what I wanted to do about it, how I wanted to go about things. And now these kids can just jump in the transfer portal. Man, what are we teaching our kids?
Yeah, well, whatever this dad's teaching them. Right? I mean,
yeah,
if this is your dad's tone, no wonder why it's his son's tone. You want to be anointed in April. Wow. Crazy. All right. If you were to rub a magic lamp and it gave you one wish for the Avs playoffs, what would your choice be between the following two wishes? I want to bounce off of Phil coming up next. The Avalanche playoffs starting very soon. Are we hearing whispers that it's Sunday? I think I saw that. Looking like it's trending towards Sunday and Tuesday.
That's what I'm hearing.
That's what you're hearing? That's what you're hearing?
That's what I'm hearing.
Get your ear to the streets?
Little birdie. My people on the streets are telling me things, Zach. You don't have my money on time.
Hey, there it is. If you were to rub a magic lamp, this isn't a perfect exercise, because I guess in a perfect world, when you rub a magic lamp, you get to wish whatever you want for.
Well, you get three wishes, usually.
You do usually get three.
Now, which genie are we going with?
We're going with the hockey genie.
Okay.
All right. Going with the hockey genie. Comes out of the lamp. All right. He says, you don't get to pick your wishes, Phil, because you've been a bad boy. But you did rub me. And I have to give you something.
So I rubbed him the wrong way, huh?
Christina Aguilera told you.
Yeah.
You got to rub her the right way.
Yeah, I feel you.
Oh, goodness. Let's plow forward. No. We're going to plow forward. All right. The genie says, I'm going to give you the two wishes, all right? And you get to pick one of the two.
Okay, so you get two, but you only get them.
Two options. Okay. All right, two options. And Kamaji, I want to get you involved in this too here. All right, throw it out to the text line. 303-713-1043, theramoslaw.com text line. What would you rather have given between these two options? If I said you could pick for the Avs playoff run, what we hope is a run, the 17th best goaltender in the sport, or the return of Gabe Landeskog fully healthy for the playoffs. So let's just set it up just a little bit further to paint the whole context.
Yeah, please do.
Avs have a horrible goalie situation. You look at goals against, you look at save percentage. It's a lower rank than there are teams in the sport. All right. So meaning backups have better in both categories. In a day and age where it's actually appropriate to cite those, because much like the running back, you do see a lot of goalie by committee these days. So if I said you get the 17th best, and I pick 17th because it's just a tick below average as opposed to a bad situation.
Yeah.
Or you could keep the goalie situation and move forward with a healthy Gabriel Landeskog. What would you pick?
Oh, this is a tough one. Georgiev is not playing well. All right. I'm nervous about that. But, man, how good would it feel to have Gabe back fully healthy? The last time we won, Gabe was there, correct?
Oh, my gosh. Phil, he changes so much.
His energy. Just him being there. At times, he probably didn't have to do anything but just be on that ice, and everybody just felt better. Right? There's some players that can do that. There's a couple players in the world that can do that, where they can just, their presence alone can help win games. Jeannie, I don't like you for this, but I have no choice. I'm going to wish that we have Gabe.
Okay.
I'm going to trust Georgiev. We have no choice. I'm going to trust Georgiev because last year, he wasn't a bad goalie last year. So I'm going to kind of piggyback off of last year. I'm going to kind of trust what Bednar's saying. I don't know if he's truly believing what he's saying.
Yeah.
But I think Bednar believes in Georgiev for whatever reason.
See, I don't know about that.
We need Gabe.
How can Bednar, seriously, I'm not trying to be like mean-spirited or anything.
No, for sure.
If you're the head coach, you're watching it more closely and intently than anyone on the planet. How could he like what he sees from Georgie?
Because, Zach, when I pound the table for somebody, and I say, you know what? Let's go get that number two center. Let's go get Sean Walker. Georgiev, I think we can still win with him. We've won with mediocre goalie play before. Georgiev didn't do bad last year. He's in a funk, right? And at that time on trade deadline, he wasn't in a funk like this.
Not like this, no.
So he's banging the table saying, I think we can win with Georgiev. They probably asked Bednar.
They had to have.
And so now I have to make myself look good, because if we get into these playoffs and Georgiev is not good, and I put my neck out there, I'm probably going to get fired. I'm going to already be on the hot seat if we don't get past the first round. And if Georgiev is the reason why, I may not be here. But I put my neck out there, so now I have to make sure that I stroke his ego. I find whatever helps him out so he's ready for these playoffs.
Oh, I want to be clear about Gabe before we move on. And I've been guilty of this. When we talk about Gabriel Landeskog, it's like about the captain. It's about what he means to the team. And we just kind of like, yeah, we all know he's a really awesome player. This dude is a great hockey player.
Yeah.
Great.
That's how we got there.
So he symbolizes multiple things, just the production. Dude, this guy in his last year was the cup run, so we haven't seen him in a long time. 59 points in 51 games. That dude scored 30 goals in 51 games. He is a blue chip dude. But is he more important than competent goaltending? Because I picked the 17th goalie for a reason, and you said we've seen them win with mediocre goaltending. You're right. This isn't mediocre goaltending. It's kind of like my golf game. Like, we're trying to get this from bad to mediocre. Yeah. We're trying to build up to mediocre.
I'm trying to get to bad. Not awful.
I got to see you slinging club. I have to. We got to get out there. Drew Spivak, if I could grant you a wish of one of the following two things, what would you prefer for a playoff, what we hope is a push? A healthy Gabe Landeskog back, or the 17th best goaltender in the sport?
This is a incredibly tough question, but kind of an easy answer for me. I love Gabriel Landeskog. Like, you just laid out the numbers. What you get in Gabe Landeskog is huge. But Gabe Landeskog hasn't played in 2 years. You have absolutely no idea what you would get back from him once he comes back from being healthy, you know, from dealing with this injury.
But he's going to be healthy.
He is now, but he hasn't played in 2 years.
Okay.
Who the heck knows what he's going to look like when he comes back?
Yeah.
This Avalanche team, as currently constructed, if you had even mediocre goaltending is capable of winning a Stanley Cup even without Gabriel Landeskog. If you just had middle-of-the-road goaltending, that's all it would take for this team to win a cup. So for me, the easy answer is mediocre goaltending.
Mm. Mediocre goaltending. Yep. Kalaje.
I am going to go with Gabe, just as the RamosLaw.com text line has. 83% of them are leaning Gabriel.
Oh, Landeskog. You gave a number to it. 83%. Mm-hmm. Damn.
Yeah. Let me tell you something, man. Gabriel Landeskog, what he means to this team, I think sometimes, especially with him being off the ice for over 2 years now, is going a little undervalued. Like, he was here through it all. And if you don't think that his impact on the ice to be able to keep the goaltender, I don't want to say focused, but, like, keep him driven, keep him motivated, keep him, like hey, man, I got you. Like, he would be what Jared Bednar is on the ice. He would be able to get in his ear and say, bro, you got this, man.
He is an extension. He is.
I'm telling you, just give us another strong 10. He can be able to, like, talk to the goaltender in a way that the other guys, I'm just going to be honest, they can't. They can't.
All right, we'll see if that 83% of the text line
Well, have
holds.
We won one since Gabe hasn't been here?
No, we haven't won anything.
Well, Jeannie, give me Gabe.
The last time I saw Gabe in Landeskog was on a fire truck rolling down downtown Denver, spraying champagne and catching beers. All right, so
we got to get him back.
But the sad reality is he's not coming back. Yeah, and I've been saying that for a long time. This idea that Gabe was going to come back for the playoffs, I said 5 weeks ago, it's irresponsible. It's irresponsible. It's not fair to anyone. Not Gabe, not the team, not the fans. All right. If the Broncos trade Cortland Sutton before Cinco de Mayo, how would we look back at Halloween? We'll explain next.